Welcome back to another edition of the Wobcast. I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw, joined by producer Mike Hiris, and we're coming to you from Sports Authority Studios at Winter Park. We're excited because former Vikings linebacker Ben Lieber is going to join us. He's the guest on today's Wobcast. That's going to happen in a moment. But first, I want to tell you about an exciting week, and that's this week. It's exciting here at Winter Park. The Vikings offseason program has launched. That happened on Monday, so the players are back in the building. It's good to see a lot of familiar faces, and the energy level is ramped up. It's a fun time to be here, so welcome back to our players as they prepare for the 2012 season. Fun to have them here. Of course, the second reason this is an exciting week, a little something you might have heard of called the NFL Draft. That's going to happen later in the week. The first round starts on Thursday night. It's going to be a very exciting time. The second and third round Friday night, the rest of the draft, and undrafted free agency on Saturday. But all the talk and all the buzz right now is obviously the first round, and I want to set the stage for that with you because this is the last time you'll hear a Wobcast before the draft. I want to talk about the Vikings' first-round pick. As you know, it's the third overall selection in the first round, and as we see it, there are four logical options for the Vikings to use at number three overall. Let's go over them really quickly before we get Ben Lieber in studio. The first logical option is the one a lot of people are assuming will happen. It's left tackle Matt Khalil to shore up the Vikings' offensive line. Christian Ponder sacked 30 times in just 11 games last year. It's obvious why Khalil would be a good choice. The second most logical choice for the Vikings is a cornerback from LSU. His name is Morris Claiborne, definitely the best cornerback in this draft. In fact, earlier in the week, Rick Spielman said one of the best cornerbacks to come out in the last several years. And so that's high praise from an NFL GM, and it says a lot about Morris Claiborne. Scouts will tell you he can play man, he can play zone, he can play press, he can play off. Really good athlete, good ball skills, a lot of production at LSU. The Vikings had the 26th ranked pass defense last year, gave up the most touchdowns, had the fewest interceptions. You can see why Morris Claiborne would be a good fit here in Minnesota. The third most logical option on the offensive side of the ball, Justin Blackmon, a wide receiver from Oklahoma State. Big, big-time production for him in college. Really good red zone receiver. That's probably the strongest part of his game, his ability to get into the end zone and to produce in the red zone. The second thing I like about Justin Blackmon's game is he's very good after the catch. He can take a short reception, break some tackles. He's a physical receiver. Hard to bring down when you watch games back of Justin Blackmon. He's breaking a lot of tackles. That is certainly a dynamic this Vikings offense could use as Christian Ponder tries to develop into a starting caliber quarterback, which we think he will. The fourth logical option is a trade. That's always an option, and it might be the preferable option for the Vikings. You're not a team that's one or two players away, so you're willing to trade back several spots to acquire more picks and get more players. If a trade does happen, I see two teams as the most likely candidates. First would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're at number five, two spots behind the Vikings. A lot of people linking Trent Richardson to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's the best running back in this draft. The Buccaneers are highly invested in their offensive line. They got Carl Nix in free agency. They have a couple of good tackles. There's no better way to show off your offensive line than to get a really good running back. Vikings fans should know that with Adrian Peterson in tow here. Trent Richardson would bring a lot of pop to that Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense. The second trading partner the Vikings might be able to find is the Miami Dolphins because they're in the market for a quarterback. Ryan Tannehill would be the guy they'd come up to get. I think that's less likely than the Buccaneers coming up to get Richardson, but Ryan Tannehill could be an option for the Miami Dolphins to trade up with the Vikings to number three. That's how we see the first round playing out. For the second round, I want you to stick around because later on in the Wobcast, we're going to give you three names to remember that the Vikings could consider in the second round if they're on the board when the Vikings choose with a 35th overall selection. Let's bring today's guest into Sports Authority Studios at Winter Park. Ben Lieber joins us on the Wobcast, a man who really needs no introduction. He's a familiar face. Ben, how's it going?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. It's the middle of the offseason, but this, as you know, is a time of year where the energy level picks up. The offseason program launched this week, and you saw it firsthand. You were walking through the hallways. It's the longest walk from the locker room to the studio ever, having you stop by and talk to everybody.
Yeah, it was interesting because there's about 90% of the guys I didn't recognize. So yeah. I've been gone a year, and all of a sudden now there's been so much turnover. But certainly some familiar faces, especially with the staff. So, you know, you take about five steps, you bump into somebody yeah. else and kind of BS with them. So it's great to be back in the building. You know, I miss the environment and the guys and such a fun, positive place to be. And so it was fun even for the 15 minutes to kind of bump into people and, yeah. and say hi.
I looked it up. You played 10 seasons in the NFL, and I'm not calling you done yet. but you're currently not with a team. So to this point, it's been 10 seasons.
Yep.
Eight of them, you played 15 or 16 games.
Yeah.
That's very impressive in today's NFL. You know, durability, never a concern with you. And it's a tough linebacker market right now, as we were discussing earlier. Hopefully it loosens up a little bit. Maybe you can get back in. But kind of where do you stand? What's keeping you busy? And what do you think is going to happen for you? I know you kind of want to get into broadcasting or something similar to that, but what's keeping you busy?
Well, just a lot of things, really. You know, aside from working out and trying to stay in shape, and and because you never know when you might get the phone call, and it is a slow market, and you just, you know, all that stuff's going to take care of itself. So really, you know, my mentality is just to stay, you know, physically ready, and then, you know, if somebody calls the agent, then that's great. But I can't control that, so I don't let it dominate my everyday routine. So, you know, really just family keeps me busy. Got a one-year-old at home. I got almost a four-year-old at home. You know, she's in school, going, shuttling her around, doing various things. And, you know, it's amazing how you can kind of keep yourself busy just doing that stuff. Yep. But, you know, and then aside from that, you know, I'm kind of trying to get some things lined up post-football, if that's the case. And, you know, definitely media is something that I think would be fun. It keeps me in the game. I've always kind of looked for avenues. Okay, how can I stay in the game? And I love the game. I love talking about the game. And, you know, it's reality TV at its finest. Trying to do things in that realm is kind of what I'm looking for.
When you're not hanging out with Abby, your lovely wife, and your two kids, are you studying the draft? What you have to have some opinions on some of these kids coming out.
Yeah, I certainly can't study the draft as much as these other draft experts. So I'm certainly no expert because there's, you know, these guys have it down to, you know, Division II guys.
Yeah, but you're a former player, man. I mean, your perspective matters more probably, at least as much.
I would say the biggest thing, though, is as a former player is understanding, truly understanding that, A, the combine is a joke. It's physically a joke. Who cares if you can, how fast you can run, whatever.
Right.
Put on the game tape.
Yep.
You know, this isn't like the college basketball in the NBA where these guys are only have 1 year of experience to watch. I mean, these guys have multiple years of experience. You know, some against the elite talent, elite colleges and conferences in the nation. So that should be what you go off of. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say that what the combine's great at is getting to know the players.
Sure,
the interview process. You know, that having gone through that thing was a complete grind because, you know, physically you got to be on. I mean, you're worried throughout the daylight hours of, okay, I got to perform physically, the agility test, the jumping test, all that stuff, the Wunderlich test, all that stuff, you know, and then you don't get any time to decompress. Then right after dinner, you go right into a list of teams you got to meet with and kind of be on your game and talk to all these personnel people and whatnot. So that's the part. If they truly just did height and weight and they did 2 days of tests and just mental tests maybe, and then talking and interviews, I think that's good for me, but it's not good TV.
No, it's not. It's a huge event on TV. I mean, it beats the combine ratings, beat some sports regular season contest ratings. And I mean, there, as you say, there is some validity to the combine for sure. And I go to it every year. I enjoy it. And the medical part,
you just
is
like seeing the guys in tights. Don't
you? Right. But that's what I was going to bring up though. Like, did you ever see the image of Tom Brady?
Yeah.
Weighing in at the combine. Yeah. I mean, he looked like your average run of the mill guy working an 8-to-5 job.
He needed to take a multivitamin or something. Like, he was pale and pasty and like no muscle tone.
and he's a 6th-round pick, and now he's a top 5 quarterback.
Yeah, one of the best to ever play.
I mean, so, you know, there is some validity to it, but you're right. Some of it, it's a joke.
Listen,
I mean,
the guys that are going to go in the first rounds, those guys are going to go the first round regardless of the combine.
Right. Oh, okay, but like I'm going to call a guy out, Dontari Poe, this defensive tackle from Memphis, okay? Like he blows up at the combine. Yep. The guys, I don't watch a ton of tape, but I know enough. I think he had 3 sacks or something like that.
Right.
And so his tape isn't great. That doesn't mean he's not going to be a good player, but the one thing that everyone loves about him is he was whatever he weighs, like 330 or something, and he ran the 40-yard dash in 4.9 seconds, which is impressive for a guy of that weight. But when is Dontari Poe going to run in a straight line for 40 yards? When he's chasing Adrian? I mean,
that's exactly my point, is all these measurables don't really add up and are not relatable to, you know, specifically some of these guys the way they play. You know, Dontari Poe, take the 40-yard dash, and maybe don't get rid of it for the D lineman, but maybe just take the 10-yard split. You know, just out of a stance.
Good point.
You know, what's the first 10 yards? Good point. Their burst? That's the measurable. Who cares about the next 30 yards? Because You know, you're not gonna count on him, you know, chasing the quarterback, putting his foot in the ground, and trying to chase down a receiver.
Right.
That's not gonna happen. So that's kind of a prime example of, and maybe he comes out to be a stud, and maybe he's, you know, he's great. But, you know, I've heard the whole argument about, well, you know, maybe his tape's not that hot because when you look at it, maybe he has Memphis quality coaches. You know, so maybe the scheme and the coaching just wasn't there, and the NFL coaches are going to kind of mold this guy in ways that the Memphis coaches couldn't. But my argument is, you're playing a position, and again, maybe he's being held back a little bit by his coaches, and maybe they're trying to have these D linemen be too technical or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But you're on the defensive line. Defensive linemen basically have one responsibility. Yeah. You know, you stay in your gap, and that's pretty much it.
Right.
You know, you cause havoc, you stay in your gap. There's not a whole lot of coaching that's involved. I mean, these guys have the best position other than getting hit, you know, kicked in the head every play. But, you know, from a mental standpoint, it's the easiest position to play.
Yep.
So my whole thing is, if you have a guy that physical, that strong, that many measurables, he should have been just a terror. You know, maybe not the sacks, but he should have had – you know, a million quarterback hurries, a bunch of tackle for losses, or just other coaches come out saying, like, listen, we just couldn't stop this guy. He was holding up two guys, or linebackers were flowing around. Maybe he was doing those things, but those things haven't come out. Everybody just talks about his combine,
because we hadn't heard of him before that. Right. Now, if he ends up sliding past the first round and we take him, I'm calling you, and you need to protect me, because we just completely talked this guy down. All right? So don't go too far away when you leave here. I might get scared, because, I mean, I don't know what he did against whoever Memphis played, but I think he'd have his way with me. So.
I don't know. You look like you work out a little bit.
I do, yeah. Right.
But you see, you're spry. You're quick.
That is true. I'm you know? I have long levers.
Like, yes.
It's hard to get good leverage on me.
It is.
My levers are long.
Yes, very much so. And you kind of just keep yourself kind of greased up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, keep your arms greased up.
That's right. Let's talk about something else. former Vikings linebacker Ben Lieber, our guest on today's Wobcast. Awesome to have Ben back. I know one guy that you do have a strong opinion of is Justin Blackmon.
Yeah.
The wide receiver from Oklahoma State.
Yep.
And you were on PA's show a couple times and kind of talking about maybe a good fit here with the Vikings.
Yeah.
I think the pick is going to be Khalil. If it's Claiborne or Blackmon, I'm not going to be sad about that at all. I mean, all three of those guys are going to be contributors for us. But what do you like about Justin Blackmon?
I just like what he can do with this offense.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying it's a deep receiver class. I think he is, you know, arguably the top guy. You know, Michael Floyd can also be up there as well. Same with the right kid from Baylor. But, you know, he's the top of the group. So you look at him, is he a true number one guy? Is he a guy that you can put outside the numbers and truly stretch the field? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think he has that ability. But I think what he can do to this offense, you know, given that you have Percy, you know, given now that you have two pass-catching tight ends, the league is all about matchups. And I think – throwing him in the mix, I think you can create a lot of mismatches and a lot of problems for these offenses. You look at all the successful offenses. Look at Green Bay. Look at New Orleans. What do? They spread people out, and they have good quality tight ends. You have good receivers, not great receivers. You know, I'm a big fan of Jordy Nelson, not just because I'm a K-State guy, but you know, look what he's done. You know, he's not the fastest, not the biggest, not the quickest, but put him in that offense and he's hugely successful.
Sure.
You know, same with Driver, kind of a just, you know, you put some of these, and Jennings, you put some of these guys on different offenses, you ask them to be the number one guy, you ask them to be a Randy Moss type of player, and it's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But you put him in the right scheme, which I think this scheme could be perfect for him, you know, and he's physical. I think if you ask him to run block, he'll be happy to do it with his size and get in the way of these smaller corners. And you still have Adrian. So let's not forget about Adrian. So I just think that, and for argument's sake, it's always fun to kind of, you know, go against the grain.
Sure.
Everybody thinks it's going to be Khalil, and I think it'd
have
be fun.
A different opinion.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun to have a different opinion and go for somebody else. Not to say that Khalil can't be outstanding and maybe, you know, he might have 7 or 8 Pro Bowls in 10 years, but you get a guy and spread him out. You don't need to hold on to the ball that much. I think having a left tackle, yes, it will solidify the line, but you still have, you know, windows to fill as far as scoring points.
Right. You got to get rid of the ball if you're the quarterback.
Yeah.
That's one thing I was going to get into this with you. So, because Christian Ponder was sacked 30 times in 11 games last year, you know, and so if you don't take the left tackle and you have issues in pass protection, people are going to be like, you should have taken the left tackle because your guy's getting killed, right? But as a defender, talk to me about this. sometimes it's not about the pass protection. The quarterback can have all the protection in the world. If the receivers aren't getting open, he's going to hold on to the ball, right? So maybe you can improve your pass protection by having receivers who can get open. Obviously, Justin Blackmon knows how to get open.
Yeah. You know, it's not an all or nothing situation in football and in many areas. I mean, it's all got to be a nice balance. And certainly, you have to have receivers that can get open. They have to understand the system and be in the right spots. So on those timing plays, you know, a lot of the league is not going. You know, everybody's getting away from the 7-step drop.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
You're getting the ball out quick. And in my eyes, the dominant left tackle that can protect for 4 seconds, you know, is not as valuable as it once was.
Okay.
With this offense, again, I think you just have to have a nice balance of getting the ball out quick. It's probably going to come down to more play calling, you know, so maybe it comes down more the accountability on the coordinators and the guys to execute efficiently. But I think that can work.
Sure.
And it's shown that it can work.
Another guy I want to ask you about, kind of put you on the spot here, is a linebacker. My favorite linebacker, maybe my favorite defender outside of Claiborne in this draft. It's Luke Kuechly.
Yep.
He's a middle linebacker from Boston College. I have to put together my top 50 for the draft party, okay?
Yep.
I think this will surprise a lot of people. I have him 6th overall. I really like him.
Yep.
It's going to be higher than most people have him, but... Yep. Luke Kuechly, to me, is a middle linebacker who's really smart and solid.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one of our scouts tell me that he was the most boring combine interview they ever had and the shortest because there was nothing to talk to him about. There's no off-field.
Yeah, there's no issues.
There's no leadership issues. And they get 15 minutes to talk to these guys, and they were done in 5 almost.
Yeah.
And so I want to know, you talked about how the left tackle, the value of having this premier left tackle who can pass protect for 4 seconds is going down. What about the value of a middle linebacker? Because there's a lot of talent evaluators in the NFL who will scrape by with athletes at linebacker and safety, but they want elite players on the defensive line and the corners. Okay,
right.
But as a former linebacker, talk to me about the middle linebacker who's like the Brian Urlacher. That's the comparison I didn't want to make with Luke Kuechly, but I keep coming back to that.
Right.
Is that a valuable piece in your defense?
I think it's valuable more from the mental side than from the physical side.
Okay.
And I've heard the trend as well that a lot of coaches and GMs believe in building up the defensive line, getting a solid secondary, and you can get by with kind of average linebackers.
Right.
But I think in this situation, I think he's going to be worth every penny because mentally he's there. He understands the game. And I still think that no matter what your philosophy is and how you build your defense, the middle linebacker is the quarterback of the defense. You've got to be smart enough and savvy enough and have the leadership qualities to get the guys lined up, to get the play call, to make all the necessary adjustments. You know, some defenses, he might get into a defense where it's fairly easy, not a whole lot of audibles before the play snap. But you go to a team like my old team in St. Louis, it was – every formation changed the defense. There is audibles called on the snap of the ball. And if that's the type of role that he has to play, then I think he's perfect for that. And I think he's going to be extremely valuable in that situation.
Yeah.
And then you take the fact that he can make plays. He's a tackling machine. He's always around the football. Yeah. And that's always valuable. You get a guy that has a high motor that can just flat out play.
Yeah.
Absolutely, you need to take him.
Man. I've even seen some of the mock drafts. You know, I know mock drafts, they kind of get made fun of a lot or people on the inside kind of mock the mock drafts. But I like to look at them just to see what people think. And a lot of them have Luke Kuechly going late in the first round. And I'm sitting there going, if he slides into the second, I mean, with all due respect, I don't know if EJ is going to come back or not.
Right.
He's a free agent. And we have Jasper who's in line to be that starter at middle if EJ doesn't come back. With due respect to those guys, to get Luke Kuechly in the second round would be incredible for us. It'd be interesting to see if he slides that far. I wouldn't believe it if he did.
No, I don't think a lot of people would believe it if they did. And you've seen how many drafts, and you kind of see these things happen based on, you know, a surprise pick in an early round. And all of a sudden, he certainly, if he's there, he might just be the best guy on the board, and you might just have to take him because the best guys are always valuable and you can find a place for him.
Well, I want you to take a look at the rest of the top 10. That's what I have. I have Luck, Griffin, Khalil. You'll have Blackmon there.
Yeah.
Richardson to Cleveland. You think that makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
And then if Claiborne is still there, I think Tampa takes him to replace Rondae eventually.
Yeah.
Rondae can still play
like
a little bit.
Well, it sounds like they're trying to get rid of Tlaib as well.
Okay, so
and
there
they,
you go.
And they picked up what Wright from Cleveland.
Eric Wright. So I think Claiborne makes sense there. The Rams, if Blackmon is still there, your former
absolutely.
team.
Yeah, absolutely. They need help in receiving.
Anything here that you would Have you done a mock top 10 or any surprises other than Blackmon going to Minnesota that you've had?
You know, in my top 10, I'm not real high on Michael Floyd.
Okay.
I actually had the Jaguars picking up Kendall Wright out of Baylor.
Okay.
And going, I mean, that's pretty high for him, but it fills a need. And, you know, I think Michael Floyd has a lot of the measurables again, mm-hmm. but to me, I think he's too big.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see him like a little bit leaner, a little bit, I guess, a little more explosive. But as far as the rest of the go, you know, I think the Bills, I had them taking Riley Reiff.
That makes sense too.
That might just be because I'm a South Dakota guy.
Okay, there you go. You are. You know what? I think with Riley, to me, he just looks like a right tackle. And I know he played left at Iowa.
Yeah.
I think he'll be a right tackle, and Buffalo needs a right tackle.
Yeah, and they do.
That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Former Vikings linebacker Ben Lieber, the guest on today's Wobcast. Let's talk about the Vikings for a little bit here before we get going. This defense specifically, because you have some working knowledge of it. You were in this mm-hmm. defense, a key part of it not too long ago. I think you know, we've gotten away a little bit from our ability to defend the run, mm-hmm. but I think that's less the problem. More the bigger problem to me is the pass defense.
Right.
In this defense, I don't want to call it the cover two defense because that's somewhat of a misnomer. I want to just call it the Leslie Frazier defense.
Yeah.
What's the problem? What's the problem with our pass defense, and how can we fix it? Do you have any opinion on that?
You know, it's hard to have a true opinion because, you know, I was dealing with my own issues in St. Louis, and yeah. I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of games.
Okay.
And the games that I did see, some of the times I think the play calls were there. They just didn't get executed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, coaches, for the most part, are going to take all the credit and they're going to take all the blame. And if a guy's not in the right spot and he's making mistakes, well, then, you know, ultimately it's the player's fault, but then, you know, overtime is going to fall back on the coaches as well. They're not getting the job done or whatever. So, unfortunately, it looked like some of the games I watched, it was a well-called play. It's just that some guys in the back end either didn't get the call or didn't get the adjustment. And sometimes you can get away with that. It's just that it always got exploited.
Yeah.
You know. And I don't know if that's just something that the teams had watched on tape, if they could make these adjustments and they were late getting adjusted as well. But
and we faced good quarterbacks.
Yeah, you faced good quarterbacks. Yeah.
Man, I mean, Aaron Rodgers and the kid in Detroit, Stafford,
yeah.
5,000-yard passer, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, again, it all goes hand in hand. I mean, if your run defense is up, then and nobody can, you know, in 2009, you know, we were shutting down the run and people weren't even running against us, not even trying. They might run four or five times in the first quarter and realize, okay, this is dead in the water. We're not going to run, so we'll start passing. Then your mentality changes a little bit, and all of a sudden, not just your corners, but your linebackers can play on your heels a little bit more. You can get more, your mental process can be more on the pass game as opposed to the run game. Changes the mentality of the guys up front. You know, they can not have to worry about holding guys up in the run game and just hit their gaps and try to make be disruptive and get to the quarterback. So, you know, it all plays hand in hand.
You know, I think Kevin last year, I don't know what he would say if you could get him in a private moment and talk about his season. Kevin Williams, I know he was dealing with some pesky injuries, and you know, I don't want to trash a guy after he leaves, but Remy Adel didn't help us, didn't help Kevin, and
yeah,
it was a long season I think for Kevin, and I would really like to see us get, you know, another defensive tackle who can be a player. I mean, that the Pat Williams void is a big void. And
yeah.
We need a guy who can fill that role, I think, for a lot of reasons. It was so frustrating for Jared Allen to have 22 sacks and to have us struggle against the pass and even against the run as much as we did. And, you know, the defensive tackle position in this defense, especially with Kevin, is so important. It keeps blockers off of the linebackers, off of you guys. You know, mm-hmm. when you were there in 08 and 09 and we had a record type of defense with the way we were not giving up rushing yards, we had great play out of the defensive tackles, didn't we?
Yeah, they're huge. And just like, going back to what we talked about earlier, you know, the philosophy is you get some stud defensive tackles, you get some stud guys in the secondary, and you can get away with average linebackers.
Yeah.
And,
well, you guys weren't average linebackers.
No, but what I'm saying is that philosophy of having a good front four, no matter what your philosophy, if you believe in, stud linebackers as well, that's always number one.
Yeah.
You know, everybody talks about the game is built up front. You know, you need a good offensive line, a good defensive line. And they set the tone for the rest of the guys in the back end. You know, they can hold guys up, keep the linebackers free to make plays. You know, if they're being disruptive in the pass game, it makes it all so much easier in the corners if they're playing man-to-man in the safeties. So having guys that can plug the holes, be disruptive, be explosive, man, that just sets the tone for the whole defense. So, and I will go back and say, you just spoke about Jared.
Yeah.
I mean, how impressive was it that he had those sacks
despite everything,
despite the fact that, you know, you weren't put in a lot of positions where in the fourth quarter you're up by two touchdowns and they have to throw the ball.
You're right.
You know,
he
had all these sacks when it's a 50-50 run pass and he was still getting there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that record, if it can be underlined and bolded or something, you know, that number, just based on the way that the Vikings defense approach had to take last year, because like I said, fourth quarter games, you know, people were just running the football, trying to run the clock out, and he still had all those sacks.
Great. So, you know, people are running on us in the fourth quarter. Kevin Williams needs a running mate at defensive tackle, so we're going to draft Ontari Poe. Great. You got me in huge trouble. He's going to hate me when he comes here.
Hopefully nobody tells him about any of these Wobcasts. And certainly
I guess you're right. I guess I'm assuming that, like, everyone listens to these.
Yeah.
You're saying no one does?
I'm going to say probably in Memphis, Tennessee, they're not listening to this.
Okay. Well,
I'm just going to go on a limb.
We're going to put your picture to promote the Wobcast. Then we're going to get a lot of hits because people want to come and look at Ben Lieber.
Yeah, I'm kind of – I've got long levers as well.
Okay.
So, that's the one thing I kind of pride myself on, was using my hands when I played. So, you know, if he comes on me, you know, break the wrist and walk away.
Okay. I'm going to be walking away before that. You're going to be the one in charge of breaking his wrist. Awesome to have you, man. Thanks for joining us. It was great to have you in here. Good to see you. I'm glad you're
absolutely
around.
My pleasure.
Okay, last thing before we go, I promised you three names to remember for the Vikings when they pick with the 35th overall pick. That'll be in the second round on Friday night. Let's get to them. The first one is a wide receiver, Stephen Hill from Georgia Tech. A lot of fans starting to become familiar with Stephen Hill because of his performance at the Combine. He measured in at 6'4", 215-some pounds, was impressive in his individual position drills, and was impressive in his vertical leap and his 40-yard dash. So fans are of the height, weight, speed, need mindset when they look at draft prospects. Stephen Hill fulfills all of those very well. He could be the vertical field-stretching threat that the Vikings are looking for. If he's there in the second round, not a bad option for the Vikings to consider. Let's switch sides of the ball for the last two names. The first one is a safety from Notre Dame. His name is Harrison Smith. He would immediately come in and be a starter for the Vikings in the secondary. I believe he'd be a starting safety. He also could be a core special teams contributor. The thing I like about Harrison Smith, he's a heady player. He's smart. At Notre Dame, he was always lining up his teammates on the defensive side of the ball. He's got pretty good instincts, takes good angles in pursuit. I think he's a guy who would really help the Vikings secondary if they could get their hands on him in the second round. The third and final name I want you to remember is a name you might not be familiar with. It's Trumaine Johnson. He's a cornerback, played at the University of Montana, 6'2", 210-some pounds, pretty good coverage skills, really good at the line, jamming wide receivers. A name I want you to remember, because if he's there in the second round, maybe even if he slips to the third, he's a guy I'd like the Vikings to consider if they don't take Morris Claiborne in the first round. Trumaine Johnson, a guy who could come in here and help shore up the secondary, team with Chris Cook and Antoine Winfield, help guard some of these awesome wide receivers that we have to contend with in the NFC North on a week in and week out basis. That is it for us today. I'm Mike Wobshaw. Thanks again for listening. We're going to leave you with a hit from CCR. Take it away. We're going up around the bend.